We're doing our class on the Jewish home. This is a new series. We're starting from scratch, or we're starting a new year. This series began when I got a phone call from a young woman who was dating one of our guys, one of our good guys. And she said, you know, he's a great guy, and he has a lot of enthusiasm for Judaism, and I really like him. I'm just having trouble because when we speak about how to run a Jewish home, he has no concept. He's talking to me about going on vacation to Egypt on Pesach. That's not what a Jew should be doing on Pesach. So after getting a few phone calls like that, I asked Rav Listman if maybe we could start a class on the Jewish home. And I asked him if one of the older, wiser rabbis who have long white beards could give such a class. And he agreed. And then it didn't happen. And after a month, I called him back and I said, you know, it's important. The guys need it. And he agreed. And another month that it didn't happen, I called him up and he said, if you didn't get the hint yet, if you're not going to do it, it's not going to happen. So you have to decide, are you going to do it or not? So I said, okay, if it's left to me, so I'll do it.
You're strong.
So we started this series with great trepidation because I really think it's one of the more important things that you guys can learn about how to run a home. It's one of the more difficult things you guys are going to learn because people think it should go easily, and when they get married, they suddenly discover it's not easy at all. And that's an understatement. And that's why I wanted people with much more experience than me to do this class. That was over half a decade ago. Since then, Baruch Hashem, we've gotten a lot of positive feedback on the classes, so I have a little bit more confidence. When I started, I would say this great disclaimer, look, you guys think it through and see if it makes sense to you, and you take responsibility. Today, I say it a little differently. I say, think it through and see if it makes sense to you and take responsibility. But I can tell you that the listeners, years have passed, and I've been getting feedback for a number of years, and many, many listeners around the globe have found that these tools help them. People have told me now that listening to these classes before marriage, on the one hand, is a little bit scary because you like to think that marriage just works. You like to think that once you get married, it's fun, it's great, it's your best friend, it's the answer to many of your dreams. And then you come to these classes and you suddenly hear about difficulties, misunderstandings, hurt feelings, arguments, and to a certain degree, it's disheartening. But our goal is to prepare a person realistically for the challenges of marriage, and through that, a person, when he actually does face the challenges, has the tools to deal with them. And I'm happy to say that over the years, I've heard from our alumni that the classes actually did serve that purpose. That many times they're standing in marriage and they tell themselves, ooh, I know that one. Yeah, I'm prepared for that one. And they find themselves over and over again realizing that, okay, this is normal. This is, and that's one of the great goals of this class, to give you a perspective of what's normal and what's not normal. And your questions are very important. Up until 2 years ago, I didn't know that guys were considering that when they get into a fight, so you go to a bar and you sleep on the couch. I didn't know that was a consideration. But like one guy said to me, what do you want? In all the movies, when there's a fight, the guy gets to sleep on the couch. That's not what we expect here. In Judaism, we expect that you guys are always going to bed together. You have to work out your issues, but there's no reason you should be sleeping on the couch. That doesn't happen. Shouldn't happen. So from your questions, I could learn a little bit more what your perspectives are. You're more than welcome to leave anonymous questions, send me an email. Those of you who don't have my card, I'll give you one at the end of class. But I'm going to try to address as best as I can what I think are key issues. At the same time, your questions will help me address things better. You have to remember that this is not a class about dating. at the very end of the year, we have a series about dating. This is a class about how to make marriage work. These are not the tools you take with you to dating. When you date, you're looking for what's right. When you're married, you're figuring out how to make it right. Those are two different things. You cannot take this class and apply it to the dating. Because in the dating, you're really trying to find fit. And in marriage, you're realizing, okay, A and B and C don't exactly fit, so what do we do with it now? That's very different. So you have to keep reminding yourself, this is not a class about dating. The class begins the night of the wedding. That's where our class begins. But our class does not begin beforehand. Now, maybe let's go around the room. I'll ask a simple question. Is there anyone here whose parents are not divorced? Okay. No, there are years that no one raises their hand. Okay, that's great. I'm happy to hear that. We live in a generation where sometimes I ask that question and no one raises their hand. We live in a generation where divorce has become the norm. Our goal is to learn about the difficulties in marriage so that you don't end up there. Okay, so let's begin. What is the greatest investment the average person makes in his life? What does the average person spend most of his time investing in? And let's maybe go off to Josephus. In the book Yosifun, which is similar to Josephus, so he records that the Persian king was sleeping, and his top three advisors decided to challenge one another. They said they'd ask a riddle, and whoever gets the answer right, they would be the top advisor to the king. So the riddle they asked was, what's the most powerful thing on earth? And I don't remember the answer of one advisor. The second advisor said, it's the king, our Persian king. Look at how many wars he's won. And Daniel said, it's the woman. So when the king awoke, they asked him to decide who was right. And the first one presented his case, and the second one presented his case. And then they all looked at Daniel, and they asked him, why do you say the woman? So Daniel said, because even the mighty king, when he goes out to war, he comes back and spreads his spoils before the woman. He comes to his wife and shows her, look what I accomplished. And so I think that at the end of the day, it's the woman. Because you see, even his accomplishments are being brought to his wife. He brings it back and spreads it before. And everyone agreed he was right. And then he said, I was just kidding. The most powerful one is God. And then he goes on a whole speech about why God is more powerful than anything else. But by the same token, the greatest investment the average person makes, the most you'll ever invest in, is your home. It's not the house. I know it's common that people say the house because that's your biggest investment for most people. It's not. It's the home. I mean, you spend the most amount of time at home. You really, everything you do revolves around the home. You take your strength from the home, and your work, your job, everything is for the home. People sometimes get confused. They say, my wife takes care of the kids, so I could go out to work. No, you go out to work so she could take care of the kids. You're working for the family. The key here is the family. The key here is the home. That's number one. And if we'd really connect to that idea, we'd have an answer to many questions that come up. My boss is having a party on exactly the day that's our 15th anniversary. Do I go to my boss's party or do I celebrate our 15th anniversary? I'll just tell my wife. You know, she understands, you know. You want to be able to celebrate the anniversary, you need money. Money comes from the boss. Boss means going to his party. I love you. The day before and the day after. You know what? I'm so excited you're my wife. We're going to celebrate a day early. All these answers fall by the wayside. If you stop and ask yourself, wait a second, what's really important here? So let me find out an excuse for the boss, but my priorities have to put the family high up there. And us men have a really hard time with that. We're very good at leaving the house. We go to our job. It's nice to come home. It's nice to have a little bit of quiet time when the kids are in bed and whatever. But we're very good at at getting out. And we have to remind ourselves that the truth is that our number one priority and the thing that will give us the greatest dividends is the home. So it's not surprising that if you want that investment to work, you have to invest. It takes a lot of work. And that's probably the biggest mistake our generation makes, is that we assume that if it's right, it'll just flow. We assume there are those marriages that just work, and that's not true. There doesn't exist a marriage on the planet, and I've seen enough that I'm willing to say that. There doesn't exist a marriage on the planet that can just work. Nothing just works. And even if you think your parents have a marriage that just works, well, you've only started perceiving their marriage very late in life. You don't know what it looked like 15 years ago when they first got married. There's no such thing as two human beings, man and woman, who come under one roof and have a marriage that just works. So I'm going to give away a little secret now, and that I don't mean to offend anyone, but there are some men, I'm sure it's not anyone here, but there are some men who think if I'd marry a yes woman, someone who is more gentle and accepting and flexible, then marriage could just work. It doesn't work that way. A woman is a human being, and she has her own opinions, she has her own thoughts, she has her own desires, she has her own needs, and she has her own opinions. And aside from that, she has her own opinions. So, you know, it's not going to work that way. She's her own person, and it's healthy that way. It's one of the blessings of marriage, that she does provide a contra, as we will discuss down the road. And so every marriage, doesn't matter who you're going to marry, every marriage is going to require a lot of investment. It's going to require time. You know, again, that goes back to what we started with, that very often you feel like the house is getting in the way. No, the house is the way. The house is not getting in the way. It could be you cannot do work at home. That's true. It could be that if you sit down and try to concentrate on doing your job at home, your kids are going to nag you. I had a phenomenal thing 3-4 weeks ago. We came for Shabbos, and I have to get out a letter before Shabbos. There's a letter they print out, and they put out in shul every Shabbos. And I get it back from the proofreader, sometimes an hour before Shabbos, sometimes 4 hours before Shabbos. And I only finish writing it sometimes an hour before Shabbos, sometimes 4 hours before Shabbos. So I sit down to write the letter, and it's a lot of pressure. I got to get it out. And to make matters worse, we just showed up and we discovered that the house we're staying in has construction. So all our clothing are covered with dirt, dust. I'm supposed to go to shul, you know, and all my clothing are covered with dust. And to make matters worse, we discovered that the house, which was supposed to be a house, is now a construction site. And all our items have been shifted. And there's a lot of dangerous stuff around the floor which the kids can hurt themselves on. So we have to deal with that and have to get the newsletter out, right? Okay, so I forgot the computer on without the plug-in. So the computer dies and half the letter I worked on got erased. So theoretically, I remember that. Fine. We quickly scramble, collect all the things, put away the dangerous stuff, get the clothing somewhat clean so we can go to shul. And I'm sitting down typing away frantically with the computer plugged into the plug. But something happened to the plug, and the computer puts up a warning sign that says your computer will not charge. It will work on the electric outlet, but will not charge. So I'm working on zero power. The cord is in the plug, and I'm working, typing frantically to get the letter done. And I got half the letter done again when one of the children comes running by and pulls the plug out of the socket. And boom, there goes the whole letter all over again. Okay, good thing for me, I was on the phone with someone at the time, so I was so proud of myself, I smiled, I said, please, you guys can't run here. It's always good, if someone's listening to you, then you have patience, then you're a model parent, right? I go and plug it in, I turn on the computer again, I'm praying that autosave and Word saved some of the document, and I turn it on, and not to my surprise, nothing saved. I got to start all over again. Okay, I'm sitting there and typing. I get halfway done. I get two-thirds done. I'm about to hit the save button when a kid comes running back, and boom, everything goes. Now I'm looking at my clock. I got 45 minutes left to Shabbos. I got to get the letter out. I got to get it printed. And I look at the kid, and I look at the computer, and I look at myself, and I say, I'm the dunce. What did I do leaving that cord still there where the kid could pass by, right? I did it twice, so who's the dunce, him or me? I know I told him not to, but I did it. I left it there. So I frantically pick up the table, push it against the wall so the kid can't run a third time by there, and plug it in, turn it on, nothing saved. I got to start all over again. Okay, I'm writing it a third time. But this time the kid decides he's playing with his car under the table. And you understand what happened a half hour before Shabbos. Boom, everything's gone. Now you look at the kid and you look at the computer and you look at the letter and you say, people are waiting and I wrote it and I can't print this week's letter next week. There's no point. It's a parsha sheet, right? I can't put it out next week. And I'm looking at the child and he's entitled to be a child. And I'm thinking, I did it right. I moved the table to the place. So now you're standing there and your nerves are at an end. And you have to ask yourself, wait a second. We're willing to tell ourselves, but that's Torah. It's for the public. I got 150, 200 people reading that letter. That's, you know, that's important. And is he supposed to be the sacrifice of the Torah I'm teaching? You know, you can very easily make the family the sacrifice, so to speak, in the name of the business, the job, in the name of many things. And it could even be holy things. But that's not right. Meaning, our first responsibility is to the family. Everything else builds on that. But we start with the family. Our first responsibility and our first investment, it starts there. You sometimes have situations where you're talking to people. And this one talks to you and that one talks to you. And your kid is standing there. Imagine you're having an affair at your house. And the different guests are coming to talk to you. And your daughter is pulling at your sleeve, Abba. And you say, just a minute, honey. And you talk to this guy, Abba. Just a minute, honey. You're talking to the next guy. But Abba, I'll be with you in a second. And a second later, you start smelling something. And you realize there's a puddle around you. So you're ready to yell at her. But wait a second, she called you. She asked your help. She couldn't get the bathroom door open. And you didn't give her the time. Whose fault is it? So we'd like to think, wait, couldn't you have said something? She tried to say something. We very often let other things take center stage, when really our first priority has to be the family. What would be so terrible if you tell a guest, just one second, and you turn to the kid? Or the wife. With the wife, it becomes more difficult. Because with the wife, it's like, well, why couldn't she wait? You guys have seen this story probably numerous times where a spouse is in the middle of talking, telling a story, telling a joke or something, and the other spouse sticks in 2 cents. You ever see this? Like someone's telling a joke or a story and their wife or the husband sticks in their 2 cents. And then, what are you supposed to say? You're supposed to tell yourself, what's most important to me is my wife or my husband. And even if they stole the punchline, so what? But they're still number one importance. And again, us men have more trouble doing that than women. And this brings us to a whole other topic which we'll discuss down the road, which is the topic of our ego in marriage, our ego within the relationship. How much of the relationship is me talking to her and how much of the relationship is me talking to the other people? Meaning when you're sitting in a public setting, very often what happens is the conversation between the spouses becomes a conversation with everyone but the spouse. You're not talking to the spouse suddenly. Why? Because I want to impress everyone else. Well, we have to remind ourselves that more important than everyone else, what should interest me is my spouse. I'm going to be with them for life. I'm not necessarily going to be with my spouse for I'm not going to be with my spouse for life, not necessarily going to be with them beyond this night, beyond this meal. Can you guys? So, we're now up to where we usually start this series. And that is with the famous enemy number one of marriage. Enemy number one. What's the public enemy number one? What's the biggest problem that couples have in marriage? The biggest problem is, you could even call it a religious problem. It's where people start asking themselves, did I marry the right one? And people sometimes coach this with religious reasons. You know, in Shemayim they decided I have a basheret. There's a specific one I was supposed to marry. Maybe I just got it wrong. Legitimate question. I'll begin with a very personal story. Okay. There was a couple who was getting married. And they go into the cheder yichud, they go into the yichud room right after being under the canopy. There's a room where the couple sit together. So this is the first time that they're together as a couple. Now, the Talmud tells us, ish the isha, a man and a woman, they both have the letters aleph shin in their names. So, zochu, if they purify themselves, they merit, then shechina beinayim. They have God's presence between them, and they have beautiful harmony. And that's the Ish, has God's name, the Yud of God's name, Aleph Yud Shin. And the Isha, Aleph Shin He, has the He of God's name. Yud He are two letters that represent God's name. Lo Zachu, but if they didn't purify themselves, if they didn't perfect themselves, then Eish Ochaltam, fire consumes them. The Talmud says that man and a woman can have the greatest volcano erupt between them. If they don't purify themselves, if they don't become better people, so then they could be just fire. And you'll see in marriage, there's a lot of fireworks. Yeah. So this couple enter the cheder yichud. They sit in the yichud room. It's a wintry night, and the whole puts out a radiator for them, and they're sitting together to eat their first meal together. And after 2 or 3 minutes, they start smelling smoke, and they turn around. And they see that the radiator put the Kala's blouse on fire. And there's a fire there. The Kala's blouse is on fire. So the chassan quickly puts out the fire and they continue the meal. And 5 minutes later, her blouse is on fire a second time. And again, they put out the fire. And the chassan is starting to think, oh my gosh. Our sages warned us, if a marriage is right, then the Shekhinah is there. And if a marriage is wrong, then fire is there. And what bigger omen is there than I'm sitting my first meal with my wife and twice a fire breaks out. And then they come home that night, and as often happens in a wedding, they didn't get to eat too much, so they sit down to eat something when they get home, and guess what happens? Her blouse catches on fire again. Another time the radiator was too close, and they make the Kala's blouse of some kind of nylon that's very thin, that's very flammable. So it catches on fire, and they have a third fire in one night. So this chassan, which is none other than yours truly, was me, is sitting there telling himself, it was me, I was the chassan, this is a story about my marriage. Okay, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, okay, don't be superstitious. Okay? But it wasn't easy. You know, I'm sitting there in the cheder yichud, and what goes on in my mind is, oh boy. Our sage just said, fire or God? Well, I don't know about God, but I see fire. And I come home and I tell myself, don't think about it, don't think about it. And we come home the first night and we're sitting down to eat something. And again, a third fire breaks out. Now what am I supposed to think? So I said to myself, stop being so religious, right? You don't have to look for omens. But what happens is very often in the beginning, you have all these questions and you look for signs and you tell yourself, maybe this wasn't meant to be. So the number one enemy that couples have to contend with when they get married is that thought, maybe this was wrong. Maybe I shouldn't have married this person. And it's very common when I was in America as a Rav, so if a fellow student would come and tell me they got engaged, so I'd say, Mazel Tov, do you regret it yet? And they'd all look at me like, huh, no, of course not. I'd say, okay, you don't have to tell me, but it's perfectly normal. And most couples between the engagement period and marriage have periods where they have second thoughts. And they tell themselves, maybe I shouldn't have done this. Or they tell themselves, I shouldn't have done this. Now that's normal. And I'm not going to tell you should marry this woman. I'm just telling you that the fact that you have second thoughts is par for the course. And it's an issue of mind over matter. If you don't decide now that you're going to, this is it, and I'm going to make this work, then you have to realize that these thoughts can plague you your whole life. I had a friend, he once attended one of these classes, and he said, that was phenomenal what you said. I said, what was so phenomenal about it? He said, because I once went to a teacher of mine and I said, you know, I'm having second thoughts. And the teacher looked at me and said, how many years are you married? I said, 3. The teacher said, well, I'm married 22 years and I'm still having second thoughts. So I was a little bit bothered by that line because I said, and that's what I say here, and that's what he found phenomenal. I say, you have to decide. Think it through, make a decision, and then it's not up for questioning anymore. Meaning, if you want a marriage to work, you have to be able to say, this was right. Now it's a question of how do we make it work? Not do we make it work, not is it right? Now that's easier said than done, but you have to go mind over matter. You have to make that decision. I've decided it's right, now how do I make it work? I can't tell you with which woman you should decide it's right. But once you've reached that conclusion, it could be the day before you're married, it could be the day after you're married, but it can't be beyond that. It should really be the day before you're married. It should really be when you got engaged. But after you get engaged, you'll suddenly find yourself saying, hey, wait, I didn't know about this, I didn't know about that. So I can't tell you, you know, sometimes real issues come up. You know, there are a million issues that could come up. And sometimes issues come up that are not real issues. And people make them into real issues. Very often, people make mountains out of molehills. I've met many people who were ready to break up an engagement and it was completely unwarranted. But a person has to decide at some point, and preferably before the marriage, they have to decide this is right and I'm not going to contemplate this question again. And if you don't shelve that question, then here's what happens. You wake up in the morning and your wife was supposed to wake up 5 minutes before you. You agreed that she would put up the water to boil because you're on a tight schedule. And she didn't. Whereas normally this wouldn't be a big deal. You'd be a normal human being and look at her and say, poor thing, she's so tired. I'll do it for her. What happens now is you say, you see, that's another thing. And then you go to the bathroom and she squeezed the toothpaste up from the middle or the end, whichever way you don't like it. And that's another thing. And then you come to the bedroom and she wakes up and she says, hi, honey, and she has bad breath. And that's another thing. She hasn't opened her eyes yet and you got 3 things on the scale. You know what? By the time you hit breakfast, you could have a list of 25, 30 things. Because the way normal marriage works is that at any given moment, there are things that are not exactly the way you'd like them to be. And no marriage can last when you're contemplating, should it, is this right or wrong? Because if you're contemplating, then you'll have a whole long list of wrongs. And you know what? So will she. That's the way marriage is. At any given moment, there are certain things that the other party is doing that are not exactly what I'd like. They're not exactly. They're close, but they're not exact. They're not big deals. You can make them into a big deal. And if you're constantly thinking, well, is it right or isn't it right? It's not going to work. There was a couple who had already broken up and were holding by divorce, and then a great therapist got them back together again. And then they went to one of the great sages of the generation, and they said, we want to get together for a trial period of 3 months. And he said, don't. So they said, what? We have all these kids. How can you tell us don't? So he said, it doesn't work. If you're going to walk back in for a trial period with that definition, so then the trial can't work because any marriage can't last the trial period. Because by definition, trial means I'm asking myself yes or no. And if I have to keep asking myself, then there's always going to be a pile of annoying things that keep bugging me. You have to enter this 3-month period as with the approach, this is it, we're making it work, we're back together again. Then you'll be willing to forgo all the little things that happen on an average day. But that's true for everyone. If you enter marriage thinking, let's see, I wonder, well then it's not going to work. There's no way. You know, there are those people who go up to the diving board, look at the water. You see them, right? They're biting their nails. They look down. They walk back. They walk forward. They look back. They look forward. They look down. There's a line behind them, and people want to be polite, and they keep looking down. And then they walk back down the steps, and they say, no, thank you. Then they're a little bit blushing, but they're like, my life is more important, and you're right there. Okay. Then you have the people who run up there, go to the diving board, and they jump. They don't even look if there's water in the pool. There's no way. Ah, they jump, right? Both parties are okay. You know who gets into trouble? You have those people who start hopping on the diving board. And then they're looking down and looking in and jumping back and jumping forward. And I'm getting ready and I'm going to show them and I'm going to jump. And then they take a leap and then they change their mind. They try to put their foot back on the diving board. And then they could break a leg. They could break their head. They could really get into trouble. Because they're not in and they're not out, right? They're about in and then they change their mind, but it's too late. And then they could really get into trouble. And that's what marriage is. You want to get married, you can jump in. You want to say, I'm not getting married, walk away. But you want to go halfway, like jump, but leave one foot on the diving board. People make a hidden bank account in Switzerland because who knows what's going to happen in this marriage. People do all kinds of things because they're not willing to dive in. So then you run into trouble. If you're not willing to put your faith, if you're not willing to invest, if you're not willing to say, this is it, this is going to work, then you can't make it work. The only way is by coming to a concrete decision. And this is easier said than done. The nature of man is that he doesn't do this. The nature of man is that he tries to protect himself. And so when he gets married, he comes with this recognition. I don't really know her. I'm very excited over her and I really want to marry her. And this is great. But what happens when things start being difficult? And they're not exactly what he was thinking. And we're working on a tight budget and suddenly she says, you wanted me to come to the wedding without a limo? And you think I can get a normal wedding gown for less than $10,000? And you wanted to buy me a ring that doesn't have a precious gem on it? So then you start saying, wait a second. So again, I'm not going to tell a person who to marry. But I am going to say that at some point you have to come to a decision. There are always going to be surprises. You're standing there before the wedding and she gets very upset at your parents. And you're not so happy about what she has to say about your parents. That's an issue. I'm not saying it's not legitimate. I'm not going to tell you what's legitimate and not legitimate. If you want to think it through when you're holding before your wedding or after your wedding, fine. But everyone has legitimate claims against their spouse. It's part of marriage. We all have our weaknesses. We have to work with a given. This is right. Now, how do we make it work? You have to reach that point. And everyone will tell you, but you know, my situation is different. Come on, you know, she yells at me. Like one guy told me, she yelled at me till 2 a.m. How could I live with such a person? I looked at him like he was off his rocker. So what? So she yelled at you till 2 a.m. I understand. Maybe she was very upset. So you don't think what you did was a big deal, but she thought it was a big deal. So it's not comfortable. It's not pleasant. But that, so what? That's everyone has to deal with the other person's weaknesses, the other person's faults, shortcomings. That's true. It's not easy. We're going to discuss it at length. But step number one is that decision. Am I willing to make that decision? This is right. And now the question becomes how to make it work, not if to make it work. And next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will discuss when does one mention divorce in a marriage? And the answer is never. But we'll still discuss that at greater length. The dangers of discussing divorce within a marriage. That will be Be'ezrat Hashem next week.